We are right now going to have my dear friend come on the program, and that is Dr. History. And Dr. History is brought to you by our friends at Minnacashia Sales. Oh, my goodness sakes. That's quite a business, Dr. History. I mean, they've got everything over there. They've got doors, windows, garage doors. They've got carpet and vinyl and metal siding. They're a distributor for the best farm equipment, panels and everything. Tartar, the very best. He's reading a book. He's not paying any attention to me. And of course, Zach and Joanne and all the crew waiting to serve you at Minnacashia Sales, 1321 East Main in Burley, 878-2091. Absolutely the best of people, the nicest of people, with the best of products, Minnacashia Sales.
And I'll just throw in, Zeb, I have personally had them do work for me, and they do great, great work.
Well, they just put a brand new door in for me.
Yeah.
Did you see that door?
I did.
What do you mean you didn't see it? You walked right through it. Your eyes kind of had a questioning look. I'm beginning to wonder if your old age isn't catching up with you.
Well, maybe a little.
Okay. How are you?
I'm doing great. Doing great.
And as always, we are now heard in how many countries?
About 82 to 83, about 170,000 hits now.
170,000 people we've managed to stay friendly with.
Well, we hope.
Yeah.
We hope they come back.
Okay. Now, tell me, I'm going to give you a chance to give a little tease. What part of history are we going to talk about today?
All right. We're going to talk about a man, his horse, and the Battle of the Little Bighorn.
Uh-oh, General Custer.
No.
Oh, how about General Keogh?
Okay, now when I... Okay, I'm leading up to this, Zeb. What is the most famous horse in the West?
Well, I can't remember. It was a sorrel horse at the Battle of the Little Bighorn.
Yes.
I cannot remember the horse's name to save my life.
It's an Indian name.
It's not Geronimo.
Indian tribe name.
It's not TP. It's not...
How about Comanche?
That was my next choice.
I thought so. All right. Well, Comanche wasn't an average cavalry issue horse. Captain Miles Keogh's personal horse. He was a well-trained, splendid mount that stood out in a herd. Comanche was a bay born sometime during the Civil War, probably around 1862. A little over 15 hands high and weighed well over 900 pounds. And over the years, he'd collected an impressive number of battle scars from his adventures on the Indian Wars, where he earned his name. Comanche was injured by an arrow during a skirmish with Indians in the Cimarron County near Dodge City, Kansas. And he let out a bellow, and his cry of pain sounded a lot like the scream of a charging Comanche warrior.
Mm.
So Comanche was his name.
Wouldn't you scream if you had an arrow stuck in your butt?
I don't know if I'd sound like a Comanche warrior, but maybe I would.
Okay.
Anyway, Comanche was known for his stamina and courage, as well as his ability to get by on cheatgrass or willow bark, just like an Indian pony. So he was readily identifiable and known to most of the men in the 7th Cavalry. And we're going to get into that.
Right.
So we've got to talk about the man.
Mm-hmm.
Captain Miles Keogh was a man who loved good horses, and he took excellent care of his horse. He and Comanche were an inseparable pair on numerous adventures and campaigns into Indian country. Now, Keogh was also one of the most interesting men in the famous 7th Cavalry. He was born in Ireland in 1840, and he liked, well, like a good Irish boy of his age, he loved strong drink, a good fight, and the Catholic Church. He also hated England and bullies, and after a few years in college, he longed to test his hand against the world, so he sailed for Africa and adventure.
Oh, my.
Later, when the Pope called for good Catholics to defend the Catholic lands, young Miles took the first ship to Europe. He quickly rose to the office of lieutenant in the Pope's army. He fought valiantly and was awarded a medal personally by the Pope for his bravery.
Personally?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, a little background about him, but by the time he received the cross from the Pope, the American Civil War had started, and that sounded exciting. He boarded a ship for the United States and promptly joined the Union Army. His Civil War record was distinguished. He quickly rose to the rank of major, and after the surrender, he was mustered out of the Union Army, which a lot of them were. Now, as a civilian, he joined up again. and a year later as a captain, you know, to seek his fame and fortune on the Great Plains fighting the Indians. And this is where he became associated with our good friend George Armstrong Custer.
Yeah, but you said our good friend. You didn't say his good friend.
Well, actually, they were sort of good friends.
Really?
Yeah. And Custer was another former Civil War officer. We know that.
Yep.
And he, as we know, was seeking fame on the plains. The two men developed a mutual appreciation for each other, and I don't know if you could call that a friendship, but they had a respect and love for fine horses.
I see.
They both liked horses.
Yeah.
Now, when on campaign in the West, Keogh and Comanche were always in the thick of the battle. The captain was unquestionably a brave man, a characteristic that Custer appreciated. Now, the Irishman drank heavily, but his drinking apparently didn't impair his duty. Some guys could do that.
Like the guy that played in all the John Wayne movies. Like the big sergeant in Fort Apache.
Right.
Remember him?
Yeah, he could drink with the best.
Oh, my.
So, but because of unrelated Indian accounts recorded at a later date, we have a good idea where the two famous soldiers made their stand at the Battle of the Little Bighorn. Custer, of course, had divided his command into three battalions, Captains Benteen and Reno, with their troops. The plan was to attack the Indians in a three-pronged charge. Each battalion was quickly bogged down. And, of course, we know Custer's command charged into the village and found stiff resistance. They were forced to retreat up the nearest hillside and make a stand. Now, legend may have overdramatized Keogh's sad end. One version says that the Irishman fought like a wildcat to the very end and was the last of his troops to die. Now, an army scout who came upon the scene a few days later said it looked like he was indeed the last to fall. Now, this same scout at a later date said he interviewed some Sioux braves who confirmed his statement. And it's a good story, and it may be true, but no one knows for sure. Now, another brave questioned a few years later. He said that Keogh was one of the first of the group to go down, taking a couple of slugs from the opposing ridge. But perhaps the most believable account of Keogh's end was that told by a Sioux brave by the name of Little Soldier.
Mm-hmm.
And he was watching the troops from another ridge. Now, according to his account, he said a slug hit Comanche, passed through the horse, and shattered Captain Keogh's knee. Now, no longer able to stand, Keogh kneeled down, holding the reins of his well-trained horse, and returned fire from underneath the horse. He finally went down with several bullets fatally struck him, and still holding desperately to the horse's reins.
Really?
That's the most accurate account that we have of the end of Captain Keogh.
I got to interrupt you and ask a question. Were you, when you read this account, at all inquisitive as to A, how somebody managed to find the Indians to talk to, and B, after a massacre like that, why they were willing to talk about it?
That's a good question. And I think one thing is Keogh and Comanche were a very prominent or noticeable pair. And so the Indians, I think, took note of such a magnificent horse.
I see.
That's just a guess.
But I see.
This fellow, this Indian little soldier, says that he came to take his horse, Keogh's horse, since it looked like such a fine horse. But he didn't want to take an animal held by a dead man, which they considered bad medicine. Now, apparently others felt the same way, too. So Comanche was not led away by any of the victorious warriors that afternoon. Keogh was, in fact, one of the few men in the 7th whose fallen body was not mutilated. Now, he was stripped of his clothes and boots, but the cross that he wore, being a Catholic, may have saved his body from the fate that befell so many of the men that day.
Yeah.
Now, the Sioux would have been familiar with such a cross and may have considered it strong medicine, a sign to leave Keogh's body alone. Now, the battlefield was not a pretty sight, and we've talked about that before. The frustration the Indians felt for years of broken treaties, the violation of their homeland, the fact that the soldiers had attacked them. Every piece of useful clothing or gear was stripped from the dead men.
That's right.
Now, the stories and legends that surround the Battle of the Little Bighorn often give readers the impression that Comanche was the only 7th Cavalry horse that survived the battle. That's not true. The Sioux warrior by the name of Gall said that the Sioux rounded up between 100 to 150 cavalry horses that day, and when the reinforcements arrived on the fields later, they collected a few more that the Indians had failed to capture.
Mm-hmm.
But they also disposed of the wounded animals that were suffering, any that were in bad shape. Now, Comanche was discovered in a small draw, and he was riddled with bullet and arrow wounds. Captain Keogh's saddle was upside down, hanging under the horse's belly. Now, the pad and the saddle blanket were gone. Now, reporters wrote that he was wounded seven times in all, which became an accepted fact. But we're still really not sure, but that's what they say. But he was severely injured, and when the troopers found him, there was talk of shooting him to put him out of his misery, which would have been the logical thing to do.
Well, it was seven. Were they arrow or bullet holes?
Both.
Oh, my goodness.
So, however, since he was such an excellent horse, an officer decided that the troopers should try and save him if they could. So with some effort, the soldiers were able to carefully get the wounded Comanche to a riverboat anchored at the mouth of the Little Bighorn River. Now, close to death, he was brought to Fort Abraham Lincoln in North Dakota. No longer able to walk by himself, with tender care and a sling to suspend him, it took him nearly a year for him to fully recover.
Wow.
Now, when he was in good shape, the officers decided that he had earned the right to be retired from active duty. He enjoyed being ridden by the children of the fort.
Oh, my.
And became a four-legged celebrity.
Oh, my.
Now, in 1878, however, several children had an argument over who was to ride him, and the company commander decided that out of respect for his service, he should never be ridden again. Comanche, he said, was the only living representative of the bloody tragedy of the Little Bighorn.
Mm.
So he said he will not be ridden by any person whatsoever under any circumstances. And this pretty well sealed the legend of Comanche. So basically, he was a living mascot for the battle. For 15 years, Comanche walked in parades, draped in black, black cavalry boots pointed backwards, draped in the saddle, symbolizing the loss of Custer's battalion.
Mm-hmm.
And you've seen this in parades before, Zeb.
Well, they do it for presidents that pass away.
Yes.
Same thing.
Yeah. So Comanche lived out a life of ease. He had the run of the fort. He was allowed to eat out of the garbage cans if he wanted to. When his caretaker and friend, a guy by the name of Gustave Knave, was shot and killed at the Battle of Wounded Knee, the poor horse felt the loss and his health actually started to deteriorate. Now, stable hands believed that the beloved old warhorse missed his friend, and on November 7, 1891, Comanche passed away, and he was nearly 30 years old. Now, Zeb, you and I have been around horses, and to live 30 years for a horse is pretty unusual.
We had one that was with us that lasted till he was 32.
And that's very unusual.
Unbelievable.
And especially a horse that had gone through what Comanche had gone through.
Yeah.
Now, the 7th wanted Comanche to be a permanent part of the regiment, so they looked for a way to preserve him. They contacted a man by the name of Dyke from the University of Kansas, who consented to do the taxidermy job for $400.
Mm.
Now, when the job was done, he told the Army that if they wanted to donate the horse to the university, there would be no charge for his services. Well, at that time, shipping and costs were a little high, and the 7th Cavalry was due to move, so the soldiers kind of reluctantly agreed to let Comanche stay in Kansas. Now, in 1893, a stuffed Comanche became a symbol of all that was true and brave. He was exhibited at the Chicago Expo. Afterwards, he returned to the Museum of Natural History at the University of Kansas. So, now other people wanted him. In fact, there's a museum up in Montana, the Custer Battlefield Museum. They wanted him. There was several other places. But
have you ever been there?
The Custer Battlefield, yes,
yeah,
I have.
It's an eerie, eerie place.
It really is. It's a somber, solemn place to visit.
Absolutely.
Almost sacred in a way. But
So
anyway, one can still visit Comanche at the University of Kansas, where he's preserved behind a climate-controlled glass. And while Comanche may not be the most famous horse in the Old West, he's certainly the most famous horse in the United States Cavalry. And I don't know if you remember this, but he was the subject of a Walt Disney movie. Do you remember ever seeing that movie?
If you give me just a minute, I'll try to think of the title of the movie. They didn't call it Comanche.
Yeah, I can't remember.
They called it something else, and I do remember I do remember the movie.
Yeah, and it's been many years since I've seen it.
Yeah.
And, of course, being a horse lover, any movie with horses, and that was one that I probably need to go back and watch again.
Yeah.
But in his day, you know, riders boasted that this noble steed was the only survivor from the Battle of the Little Bighorn, although quite a few Sioux begged to differ on that account. So Comanche was really the most noted four-legged survivor from the doomed Custer battle.
Let me ask you this, and I'm, excuse me, I got a little frog in my throat. You know, you got to admire the journalists of that time. Now, you said that they had approached some of the warriors that fought at the Battle of the Little Bighorn, a year later?
Yeah, a year or two later.
Okay, but the Sioux Indian Wars and the other associated tribes that were with the Sioux that day at Custer's Last Stand, that was an ongoing battle for years to come. I mean, it didn't end right there in 1876.
No, and you know, they had battles before that and battles
and
after that.
So now my question would be, and I think you'll agree with me, to be a journalist and go in and ask questions of the tribe and the warriors, that took a little moxie on its own.
Well, not unlike today with reporters going into Afghanistan and Iraq and places like that.
Yeah.
It had to be dangerous, and we don't know how many journalists maybe tried to get an interview and
didn't come back. Yeah. And it's surprising, you know, to talk to the Indians. Did they use an interpreter? Were the Indians really forthcoming in the information that wasn't jaded against the whites? I mean, there's a lot of questions there.
Well, and even as we have discussed the battle itself, there's questions about where Custer actually died.
Isn't there also questions about where most of the main battle took place?
There is, and you can have several people telling the same story from a whole different viewpoint, and I've seen this time and time again with history. I've read different accounts of the same thing, and you would almost think it was two different battles or incidences.
Yeah. I know that there was some question, and correct me if I'm wrong, but there was a lot of question as to basically were the troops under Custer's regiment, were they centered in a small area and basically tried to go back-to-back in hand fighting and pistol shooting and everything. It was supposedly up on a little knoll, and then I've heard discrepancies to that story that it was almost down towards the river bottom.
Well, one story I read was that Custer was actually shot down in the river while he was crossing the river.
Yeah, I've heard that same story.
His men picked him up, put him back on his horse, and at that point, did he make it back up to the Last Stand Hill? I don't know.
But now, they had made through history the remarks that Custer was the only one that was not mutilated by the Indian squaws that went through the dead soldiers. It was the squaws that did the mutilation. And but it was also Keo. You said
right.
He was not touched.
Yes, and I would have to think that, again, as I mentioned, the Indians respected the Catholic cross.
Yeah.
That I suspect there were other men that may have had a Catholic cross around their neck besides Keo. Now, I don't know that for sure.
You know, in history, though, Doc, it's so easy to take a white against the world or, you know, like Custer against the Indians, etc. But let's be really honest about General Custer and what happened there on that day with the 7th Cavalry. All of this, I think, when I've studied that, and there's books on that shelf over to your left that absolutely I've read a lot about it. It could have been avoided, and absolute negotiations would have been preferred, and I think they'd have been further ahead with their relationship with the Indian tribes.
You know, Zev, I'm reading a book right now about Kit Carson.
Yeah.
And one of the things this book talks about is that the officers, a lot of the officers were, how should we put it, less than desirable men as far as their moral standards, their a lot of them were drunks.
Well, you will agree with me, though, Ken, that looking at General Custer, for instance, it was nothing more than another feather in his cap to try to go higher up the food chain.
Exactly, and had he waited for the rest of his reinforcements,
yep, absolutely,
the battle would have turned out probably much different.
Wouldn't you say it was arrogance and stupidity?
It really was. And as I mentioned, you know, Keo and him were out there to make a name for themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
interesting story, and I have seen, and I've got over here someplace in a couple of my books, a picture of Comanche, and also before he passed away, when he was residing at that fort, what was it, Abraham Lincoln? I think he said he was at Fort Abraham Lincoln, right?
I think that's when he was being...
treated?
Yes.
Okay, and then also I have a picture someplace that at the university that you mentioned.
Right.
So, anyway, interesting story about Custer's Last Stand.
Well, just a little different viewpoint, and I guess we're going to go check out that Disney movie and see how accurate that
do
is.
Do that. You know, that's the problem I have, and I've only got a minute left, and I got to do a commercial break, but I really chide and chastise Hollywood because they distort history so bad. There's an old movie with Henry Fonda about the OK Corral. It's completely, completely erroneous, and it shows Doc Holliday getting killed at the OK Corral. He didn't die at the OK Corral. And I just wish that Hollywood, if they're going to do something that's of historical value, they would treat it with respect.
I agree 100%. They glorify and dramatize and...
It's terrible.
So the movies that do depict things accurately, I like to read a book and then I like to see the movie to see how accurate the movie and the book are.
Yeah. Yeah, and unfortunately, you take screenwriters and also the big Hollywood sell, and it can take a relatively good story and just trash it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yep. What are we going to talk about next week, real quick?
It's such a mystery at this point that I won't tell you.
That's a cop-out, and you know it.
I haven't got a clue.
Hey, God bless you, man. That was great.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.